Very warm welcome to our live in-studio audience today here at Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir in Australia. A special welcome to all our listeners on the internet. Special shout-outs to Steve in the UK, who does our website, and also to Dave. We're looking at you, Dave. Anyone wants to ask a question about today's class, please feel free to leave a question in the comments section of the website. I'll be checking the comments for the next 2 weeks, and I'll answer any questions that you have. So please feel free to ask them there, just add a comment, and I'll get back to you. So today we're hearing from the Srimad Bhagavatam. We're starting a new chapter, chapter number 65, Lord Balaram Visits Vrindavan. So we begin with the invocation of auspiciousness, chanting the sacred mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. My obeisances to Naranarayan Rishi, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and topmost human being, to Mother Sarasvati, the Goddess of Learning, and to Srila Vyasadeva, the author of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Text number one. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Balabhadra Kuru Shrestha. Bhagavan Ratam Astita. Suriddhi Drikshur Utkanta. Praya Yaunanda Gokulam. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Balabhadra Kuru Shrestha. Bhagavan Ratam Astitaha. Suriddhi Drikshu Utkanta. Praya Yaunanda Gokulam. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Balabhadra Kuru Shrestha. Bhagavan Ratam Astitaha. Suriddhi Drikshu Utkanta. Praya Yaunanda Gokulam. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Balabhadra Kuru Shrestha. Bhagavan Ratam Astita. Suriddhi Drikshu Utkanta. Praya Yaunanda Gokulam. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Balabhadra Kuru Shrestha. Bhagavan Ratam Astita. Suriddhi Drikshu Utkanta. Praya Yaunanda Gokulam. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Balabhadra Kuru Shrestha. Balabhadra Kuru Shrestha. Bhagavan Ratam Astita. Bhagavan Ratam Astita. Suriddhi Drikshu Utkanta. Gokulam. Ladies. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Balabhadra Kuru Shrestha.
Bhagavan Ratnamastitah Suri Lidriksho Utkanta Raya Yonanda Gokulam Sri Shuka Uvacha Balabhadra Kuru Shrestha Bhagavan Ratnamastitah Suri Didriksho Utkanta Prayayo Nanda Gokulam Sri Shuka Uvacha
Shukadev
Goswami said
Balabhadraha
Lord Balaram Kuru Shreshtaha O best of the Kurus King Parikshit
Bhagavan
the Supreme Lord
Ratham
on his chariot
Astitaha
mounted
Suhrid
his well-wishing friends
Didrikshu
wishing to see
Utkantaha
eager
Prayayau
traveled
Nandagokulam
to the cowherd village of Nanda Maharaj. Translation. Shukdev Goswami said, O best of the Kurus, once Lord Balaram, eager to visit his well-wishing friends, mounted his chariot and travelled to Nandagokula. Please repeat. Shukadev Goswami said, O best of the Kurus, once Lord Balaram, eager to visit his well-wishing friends, mounted his chariot and travelled to Nandagokula. This is the purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. As Srila Jiva Goswami points out, Lord Balaram's journey to Sri Vrindavan is also described in the Harivamsa, the Vishnu Parva 46:10.
Kasya chid atakalasya smritva gopeshu sauhridam jagamaiko vrajam rama krishnasya numate stitaha.
Remembering the deep friendship he once enjoyed with the cowherd folk, Lord Rama went alone to Vraj, having taken Lord Krishna's permission. The simple residents of Vrindavan were aggrieved that Lord Krishna had gone to live elsewhere, so Lord Balaram went there to console them. Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur addresses the question of why Lord Krishna, the great ocean of pure love, did not also go to Vraj. In explanation, the Acharya provides the following two verses.
Prayasi prema vikyata pitaravati vatsalau prema vashyascha krishnastams tyatva nakattam meshyati itimatvaiva yadava pratyabadnan harirgatau vraja prema pravardisva lila dinatvam iyusha.
The Yadu's thought. The Lord's beloved girlfriends are famous for their pure ecstatic love, and his parents are extremely affectionate toward him. Lord Krishna is controlled by pure love, so if he goes to see them, how will he be able to leave them and come back to us? With this in mind, the Yadus prevented Lord Hari from going, knowing that he becomes subservient to the pastimes in which he reciprocates the ever-increasing love of the inhabitants of Raja.
Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha.
Srila shortly before he left mortal vision, Lord Chaitanya gave an instruction to his spiritual successors, who are today known as the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. These personalities were never formally initiated by Lord Chaitanya in the sense that we understand it, with a fire ceremony and official giving of initiation. But nonetheless, they were the Lord's intimate disciples, and they are his spiritual successors, and they were given his instructions to carry out. The main form of association with the spiritual master is through serving the instructions of the spiritual master. So this instruction that Lord Chaitanya gave to the six Goswamis was their means of associating with him when he was not physically present with them. Nana shastra vicharanaika nipunau saddharma samstapakau. In order to establish samstapaka, saddharma, true religion, they should scrutinizingly go through all the different scriptures, and they should collate scriptural evidence to form the underpinning or the justification of the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya. Shastra Nipuna, very expert in scrutinizingly studying the scriptures. And so they did that. Srila Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatan Goswami, Srila Jiva Goswami, Sri Gopal Bhatt Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, and Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami.
Isn't there?
Six. Yeah, Raghunath Das and Raghunath Bhatta, Gopal Bhatta, Jeev, Rupin, Sanatan. So they have written many works describing the scriptural basis for the Sankirtan movement and for the understanding of Lord Chaitanya's Prem Prayojan, his particular interpretation or explanation of transcendental relationship and rasa. Particularly Srila Jiva Goswami, who Srila Prabhupada cites at the beginning of this purport, is the most prolific writer in the Vedic history, aside from Srila Vyasadeva himself. The only person who has written more than Srila Jiva Goswami about the Vedas is Srila Vyasadeva. There is one university in India which has a department dedicated to studying the works of Srila Jiva Goswami. It is called the Srila Jiva Goswami Department. So they've written many works, and in the Tattva Sandarbha, one of the six Sandarbhas, Jiva Goswami wrote Sad Sandarbha, six Sandarbhas, philosophical treatises which form the systematic underpinning of our philosophy. And in the Tattva Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami has nominated the Srimad Bhagavatam as the ultimate praman, or source of evidence. The Srimad Bhagavatam he describes as Amalam Puranam, it is the spotless Purana. Even though our acharyas have written so many literatures, the six Goswamis, they never wrote a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. The Vedanta Sutra is one work written by Srila Vyasadeva. It is also known as the Brahma Sutra or the Bhadarayana Sutra. And it is a concise study of the issues that arise in the mind of a person who has read all of the Vedic literature. The other day we heard from Gangeshwara Prabhu in the class, and he was saying sometimes people ask, why does God create the world with evil in it? Is that not unfair? Why is God unfair to the people? So this is a common question that people ask, and this is one of the questions that is dealt with in the Vedanta Sutra. Other questions in Vedanta Sutra include, what is the goal of the Vedas? Some people say that the goal of the Veda is to instruct us how to live nicely in this world and how to perform particular activities which can elevate us to higher stations of life in the next life, elevation to the heavenly planets. Others counter this by saying that no, the goal of the Vedas is to transcend the material existence and to come to the level of spirit or Brahman. So the Vedanta Sutra opens considering this particular question, Atato Brahma Jigyas. Therefore, the conclusion is that one should inquire into Brahman. Or in other words, the actual goal of the Vedas is to inquire into our spiritual identity, not simply to live in this world in a pious and comfortable way. That is the first question that the Vedanta Sutra considers. Sutra is a word that means thread. In English, we have this term sutures. You know, if you get some cut in your body and you need to get stitches, today we call them stitches, but previously they were called sutures. So the word sutra means a thread. So if we have a thread, that represents the line of reasoning or thinking. And then each of the sutras in the Vedanta Sutra is like a bead on that thread. Sometimes if a power line is strung across a valley, in order to stop a light airplane from crashing into that line, they will put round red balls onto it so that it becomes visible. In this way, the pilot cannot see the line, but he can see the balls. So he can infer where the line is, and he can avoid it in this way. In the same way, the codes of the Vedanta Sutra represent the round balls, and the thread between it is something that the reader must infer by reading the Vedanta and utilizing their intellect. The Vedanta Sutra is very difficult to understand. After all, the audience of the Vedanta Sutra is meant to be persons who have read and studied all the Vedas, the Puranas, the Upanishads. And after reading it, they said, you know what? I have some questions that I would like to ask. So Vedanta Sutra answers those questions. Atato Brahma Jigyas. Therefore, we should inquire into Brahman, or spirit. And the next one, Janmad Yasya Yata. What is that Brahman? Janmad Janma Adi Yasya. It is the source of everything. Janma Adi, the source. Janma means birth, Adi first. It is the origin of everything. That is the nature of Brahman, in a very general sense. So this Srimad Bhagavatam begins with Janmad Yasya. Janmad Yasya Yaton Vayaritaritash Chartesh Vabhigyaswarat. It gives additional information, Abhigyaswarat. The Supreme Brahman is all-knowing, Abhigya and Swarat, completely independent and self-sufficient, Swarat. So our Acharyas, up to the point of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they had not written a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. They had written many, many works. So many that, as I mentioned, Srila Jiva Goswami is second only to Srila Vyasadeva, and yet they did not write a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. That became a problem at one point. Sometime in the 17th or 18th century, there was a challenge to our Sampradaya. I believe it was the Sri Vaishnavas, and I offer my humble obeisances to them, and please I ask them to forgive me if it wasn't them, but we don't hold any grudges anyway, because this is a transcendental pastime. Anyway, another Vaishnava Sampradaya challenged us in Jaipur. The Muslims had invaded Vrindavan, and in order to protect the deities, Sri Radha Govinda had been carried from Vrindavan to Jaipur, and they were being cared for there, and the devotees were worshipping them, Srimati Radharani and Sri Govinda Dev. The Vaishnavas from the other Sampradaya became very disturbed by this worship. And they said, this is improper, that you are worshipping Krishna alongside a woman that he is not married to. In our Sampradaya, we understand that this Parakya Bhav, Parakya Rasa, Krishna's intimate pastimes with Radharani, seemingly unmarried, that this represents a very high stage or state of emotional exchange and transcendental love. Of course, in the material sense, this would be a very degraded thing. And so therefore, the Vaishnavas from the other Sampradaya, they were taking it like that. They said, if you do this, you are setting a very bad example for the people. Krishna should be worshipped in his form of Lakshmi Narayan, or he may be worshipped in his form of Rukmini Dwarkadev, the Lord of Dwarka, Dwarkadish, and Rukmini, his married wife, Swakya Rasa. And they became very disturbed by this, so much so that they came into the temple and they forcibly took Radharani off the altar and took her away from the temple. So the devotees were very disturbed. At the same time, they opened a case with the Maharaj of Jaipur, the king, and they wanted to have the devotees banned from the kingdom. So the king of Jaipur was actually favorable to the devotees. That's why we took Radha Govinda there, so he could take care of them, give them protection. But at the same time, he had to deal with the situation according to the laws, according to proper procedure. He could not simply make an arbitrary decision. So the devotees from both sides came into the court and presented their case. The devotees from our side said, we are a bona fide sampradaya. Our worship is authorized. We have so much literature backing up our conception. We are not simply sentimentalists. We are an authorized religion. I remember one time, one sannyasi, he was speaking publicly, and someone was challenging him and presenting so many thoughts, I think I believe like this. And he said to him, I'll tell you what, our acharyas, such as Srila Jiva Goswami, have taken the time to write down what they are all about. Why don't you go away and write down what you're all about, and then come back and we can discuss it. So this is a sign of commitment to a particular position, that you take the time to work it out and write it down in a way that others can analyze it and look at it, and they can see systematically what your position is, and then they can refute it if necessary. So the argument of the Sri Vaishnavas was that you do not have a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. In order to be a bona fide Vaishnava Sampradaya, you must have a commentary on Vedanta Sutra that we can go through and that systematically sets out the precepts of your religion, and we can go through and refute them. And so the devotee said, of course we accept Srimad Bhagavatam as the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. And remember that Srimad Bhagavatam was one of the 5 points that Mahaprabhu gave as the essence of spiritual life. Reading Srimad Bhagavatam. What were the other ones?
Chanting the holy name.
Chanting the holy name.
Living in the holy Dham.
Living in the holy Dham. Mathura Vas.
Worshipping the deity.
Worshipping the deity.
Associating.
Associating. Sadhu Sangha. Taking prasadam. Yeah, that's it. Taking prasad. Chanting, feasting, dancing. Reading Bhagavatam. Living in Melbourne's Mahaprabhu Mandir. And always chanting the holy name. So they said, Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. What does it mean, natural commentary? Who has heard this before? Anyone heard this? That Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra? What does that mean? Yes. Dale?
After writing Vedanta Sutra, he wasn't satisfied, so he wrote another commentary which deals with devotional terms.
Mm. Yes. So Srila Vyasadeva, the author of Vedanta Sutra, wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, in that sense, it is the natural commentary. For who, what is more natural who is more natural to commentate on a work, or who is more appropriate to commentate on a work than the author himself? He knows what he meant to say, so therefore it is only natural that he should explain it. So in this way, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary. And as Dale points out, not only is it the commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, but it actually extends the Vedanta Sutra. It goes further than the Vedanta Sutra goes. The other reason why the Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary is that it is not written in a verse, purport fashion, as most commentaries are written. Instead, it is written in a very natural, organic way, in the form of connected stories which illustrate the different principles in the Vedanta Sutra. So, if one studies very carefully the Vedanta Sutra and the Srimad Bhagavatam, one will see that different parts of the Vedanta Sutra are expressed and explained in various histories in the Bhagavatam. So in this way, we have 2 ways of understanding how the Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So this was the argument of the devotees that they presented to the king, or before the king. Now it is time for Purva Paksha, the presentation of the opposing argument. The Brahmin Vaishnav devotees from the other sampradaya said, this is not your commentary. This is a commentary written by Vyasadeva. Even if we do accept it as a commentary, it's not yours. It does not belong to your particular school. It is not written by one of your acharyas. And more so, even furthermore, Radharani does not even appear in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Nowhere do we find the name of Radharani there.
So therefore, how can you justify your worship of Radharani on the basis of Srimad Bhagavatam? So things did not look very good for the devotees. Radharani had been stolen away from the temple, was gone. The devotees were lamenting like anything. Just imagine if you came into the temple in the morning for the morning program and Srimati Radharani was not visible. Imagine how the devotees would feel each day, seeing that. Meanwhile, there's a court case going on, and the government is threatening to close down everything, confiscate everything, put the devotees out into the street. So the devotees were in great anxiety. They didn't know what to do. They thought, we have to get someone to help us. So they went to Vrindavan, and they looked for the senior-most Vaishnava of the time. This is the second Vaishnavacharya that Srila Prabhupada cites in the purport, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. At this time, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was the senior most Gaudiya Vaishnava. He was very famous for his insightful commentaries and for his defending of Al Siddhanta against all challenges. So the devotees came to him and they said, "Please, you must help. Radharani has been taken from the temple and we are being challenged in the court of the king of Jaipur." Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he said, "Now I am an old man, and I am done with fighting these battles. And besides, what is actually going on here," and he gave a mischievous smile, "is that Radharani has become angry with Krishna, so she's had the devotees take her away, and I'm not going to get involved in that." So he said, "Rather, what you should do is you should find this other devotee. He has been a student of mine, and he is perfectly equipped to deal with this situation. His name is Baladev. You'll find him near Govardhan chanting." So they went to Govardhan, and they found Sri Baladev there. Now we know him as Sri Baladev Vidyabhushan. This name he was given, the ornament of knowledge, Vidyabhushan. They explained the situation to him, and he thought about it, and then he went down from his cave near Govardhan into one temple there in Vrindavan. Does anybody know which temple it was that he went to? He went to one of the temples there, maybe Radha Madan Mohan. And he sat before the deity and he prayed, "My Lord, what do you want me to do? How should I deal with the situation?" And then the Lord spoke to him and said, "I will give you a Vedanta Sutra commentary." So Baladev sat in the temple for 3 days writing as the deity dictated the commentary to the Vedanta Sutra. After 3 days were complete, the Govinda Bhashya, Lord Govinda's commentary on Vedanta Sutra, was completed. And with this Vedanta Sutra commentary in hand, Baladev Vidyabhushan and the devotees travelled back to the court of the king of Jaipur, where they presented this commentary before the Vaishnavas, the devotees of the other Sampradaya, and the king. And naturally the other Vaishnavas were very surprised by this development, because as far as they knew, there was no Vedanta Sutra commentary. A Vedanta Sutra commentary is not something that you write overnight. It is not something that is written overnight. And yet somehow, these devotees had come 3 days later with their Vedanta Sutra commentary in hand. So they read through the commentary and then they said, "Okay, we give in." And then they brought Radharani back and put her onto the altar. And after that, we have been able to worship Radha Govinda freely. Because of this, Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan protected our Sampradaya in this way. And so Srila Prabhupada, in the same mood of protecting our Siddhanta against challenges and establishing our Sampradaya, has dedicated his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita to Baladev Vidyabhushan, who so nicely wrote Govinda Bhashya, so nicely presented Govinda Bhashya. You'll find that in the dedication at the beginning of the book. So the Vedanta Sutra
is the kind of scripture that is studied by Brahmanas. It is not so much studied by Vaishnav devotees. Devotees are more interested to study Srimad Bhagavatam than they are to study Vedanta Sutra, because Vedanta Sutra is very dry. Very dry. People can get really lost, you know, in intellectualism. It's good to know. We should know things. But there is something beyond knowing. This is the bhakti marg. This is beyond karma and jnana. This is not about karma kanda. This is not about jnana and knowing and renunciation, but it contains both. It contains karma, action. Devotees are very active. Jnana, knowledge and renunciation. Devotees are very knowledgeable and devotees are very renounced from sense gratification. But then it contains more. It contains bhakti, devotion, emotion, dedication. Brahmanas, they get lost. They get lost in Brahmanism, intellectualism, knowing. It's a subtle form of dominating. If you know something, then you're superior to it. You cannot know something unless you are superior to it in some sense. You must be above something to look down and to see it and to understand it. When you're inside something, well, you can't understand. If you're underneath something, you can't see it. A mouse cannot oversee a cat, no matter how hard he tries. But an eagle automatically oversees everything with no effort. So there are some things that we cannot know. But Brahmanas, they can become conditioned to this intellectual superiority, and therefore they become lost. There are two paths that we can go by. One is this path of studying the Vedas, performing all the rituals, doing all the different sacrifices, studying the Upanishads, studying the Vedanta Sutra, and in this way ascending. Then there is another path we can take by studying Srimad Bhagavatam and performing humble devotional service. Just like that one time Lord Balaram and Krishna, they were with their cowherd friends in Vrindavan, and they were very hungry. They had nothing to eat. So then the boys said, "Oh, Krishna and Balaram, we are so hungry. Can you get something for us to eat?" So they thought about it for a moment and they said, "Yes, there are some Brahmins nearby and you can go to see them and ask them for something to eat. They are performing a sacrifice, but they are at the stage now where the boga has been offered, so now it is able to be distributed. So you should go and ask them to give it to us in charity. But rather than using my name, Krishna, you should tell them that Balaram wants it. Because I am known as a Vaishya. So they might not be so disposed to give charity to a Vaishya, but Balaram, he is the son of Vasudeva, he is known as a Kshatriya. So they might be more, you know, predilected, disposed towards giving charity to a Kshatriya." So they went there to get the food and they asked for it, the prasad, but the Brahmanas wouldn't even speak to them because they're too busy doing their activities, you know. Sometimes someone comes in, you're chanting Gayatri or you're doing something and they want to talk to you and you just let them know that you're chanting and then they wait, something like that. In the Pancharatra Pradipa, it says that if one is performing their deity worship and a guest arrives unexpectedly, then one should leave the deity worship and should go to receive the guest. And then they can return to perform their deity worship after the guest has been received. One should not break silence while performing deity worship or devotional activities. For example, we should not speak during the japa period. We should remain focused. Our mind should become absorbed in service to the holy name, that service of repeating the holy name and hearing the holy name. We should be very much attentive to that. And we should not break our silence. At the same time, the atithi guest, the unexpected guest who comes atithi at an unknown time, is considered to be the representative of Narayana. So therefore one should receive him with all honour, just as Lord Krishna received Sudama Brahmana in his home. And then one can return to worshipping the deity. But these Brahmanas, they just ignored the boys. Even though they were actually dear associates, personal associates, Nitya Siddha Parishadas of the Lord himself, in his pastime. Of course the Brahmanas are also in the pastime, but they're showing this. They did not understand the relative value or identity of these personalities. So they ignored them, and so the boys went back to Krishna and Balaram And they said, we have nothing. They wouldn't even speak to us. And they were becoming very disturbed. If you have a small child, you know what it's like when they get hungry. I used to worship the deity Sri Sri Gornitai in one temple, and then my son was born. And in the mornings I would get up and prepare the offering for the deity, and we would heat milk and give them their morning offering. And sometimes, for whatever reason, devotees would be late in making the offering to the deity. Then my son Prahlad was born, and one devotee was telling me, oh, Srila Prabhupada explained that for the first 5 years of his life, he is your deity, so you have to serve him, your duty is to serve him. And so, actually, Keshava also said that to me last night. He said, when you get married, your first duty is to look after your wife, or to look after your husband. And then when you have children, your first duty is to look after your child. And one thing I realized was that if you're late to make the offering to the deity does not scream. But if you're late making the offering to your child, the child screams. And so I was thinking, you know, when we're doing the deity worship for the deity and we're late to make the offering, we don't really feel anything. But as soon as I was late making the offering to Prahlad, he would be screaming, he would be in such anxiety, and it would create so much anxiety in myself. So in this way, the boys were becoming very disturbed because they were so hungry and they were trying to get something to eat, but the Brahmins wouldn't even speak to them. So then Lord Krishna said, you can go and see the wives of the Brahmanas. They're in the house. And go and ask them for something to eat. So the boys, they went to the house where the wives of the Brahmanas were, and they asked for something to eat. They said, well, Krishna and Balaram, they want something, some food to eat because we don't have anything. We're very hungry. So immediately, without even thinking, they immediately responded and prepared some nice foodstuffs and gave it to them to take. So knowing is not everything. It is good to know, but it's good not to get lost in knowing. So the Vedanta Sutra represents the pinnacle of the Vedas and has all the conclusions about the different rituals, why they're performed, all these things. But as Dale explained, Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. It contains all the conclusions of the Vedas, but it contains even more. In the Vedanta Sutra, you will learn that the Supreme Absolute Truth is the ultimate reality, and that everything emanates from that Supreme. You will even get some inference, some indication that the Supreme is a person, but you will not get intimate details of that person, their activities, their personality, their likes and dislikes. Whereas in Srimad Bhagavatam, we find all this information about the modes of material nature, the relationship of the jiva to the world and to the Supreme Lord, and we also find out about the intimate details of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Absolute Person, including the love life of God. And so that is what we are going to hear about in this chapter of Lord Balaram Visits Vrindavan. And we begin to hear something in this purport where Srila Prabhupada cites these two acharyas, Srila Jiva Goswami and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, speaking about the relationship between the Lord and the residents of Vrindavan and the feelings that the Lord has for them. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Yayata mam prapadyante tams tataiva bhajamyaham. As each surrender unto me, I reciprocate with them accordingly. I reciprocate with them in the same way. I treat people the way they treat me. Sometimes people say, well, God is unfair because he's favorable to some people and not to others. Why did Lord Vishnu fight on the side of the demigods against the demons? Everybody has the same opportunity. If you approach the Lord with love and devotion, then he will reciprocate with love and devotion. He is a person. Aren't you like that? If somebody treats you nicely, don't you feel disposed to treat them nicely? If somebody at least treats you with respect and appreciation, don't you then feel well disposed toward that person? That is natural. We have all the qualities of the Supreme within us in minute quantity. We can understand something about Krishna by looking at ourselves. I'm a person. I like to be treated a certain way. Krishna is the same. So as we treat Krishna nicely, then Krishna will treat us nicely. He will reciprocate. Love means to put the other person first. If you love someone, then you put their needs and their desires ahead of your own. So to love Krishna means to put Krishna's needs and desires ahead of our own. It means to make our life plan around Krishna's desires, around the desires of Lord Chaitanya, around the desires of the servants of Lord Chaitanya, around the desires of Srila Prabhupada, around the desires of our spiritual master. To structure our life around that, that is the meaning of love. Where will I live? Who will I marry? What will I do? What job will I take? How will I spend my time? How will I spend my money? If you want to know where someone's heart is, look at how they spend their time and how they spend their money. Because that will indicate to you really where their heart is. It's not simply a matter of professing with our mouth that something, this, that, but a matter of actually performing it in action. And sadhana bhakti means to do it even though we don't feel it in the beginning. And then the feeling will come. Krishna within the heart will reciprocate. So there is no one who loves Krishna more than the inhabitants of Raj Adam. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Savadamam parityaja mam ekam sharanam raja. Give up all varieties of religion. Vedanta Sutra, Karma Kanda, Upanishads, Vedas. Give up all that up. Mam ekam sharanam raja. Simply surrender to me. Exclusively. And this use of the word in that verse, Vraja, it evokes that ultimate surrender of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, Vrajavumi. So the Lord, he could not go back there himself, because the residents of Dwarka knew that if he went back there, he would never come back to them again. And they were so attached to him that they would not let him go. So they made a compromise, because Lord Krishna had promised to the inhabitants of Vrindavan that he would return. So they said, well, instead you can send your brother Balaram, he can go. That's just as good as you going. You know? Actually, Krishna and Balaram are one. Once somebody asked Srila Prabhupada, what is the difference between Krishna and Balaram? And Prabhupada said, Balaram is white and Krishna is black. There is another subtle difference, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Balaram is the Supreme Personality of servitorship to Godhead. Adiguru. And as we will find, the devotees are not... They are happy, they are very happy to see Lord Balaram, but they are not satisfied. It is not enough that he has come in the place of Krishna. But all these things we will hear about in this chapter as we continue through it over the next few days and weeks. So the verse again. Sugadev Goswami said, O best of the Kurus, once Lord Balaram, eager to visit his well-wishing friends, mounted his chariot and travelled to Nandagokula. Does anyone have any questions or comments? Sorry, I'll just take down.
I was just wondering, how big is the Vedanta Sutra? Is it a large volume?
I don't know. It arrived the day I left to come down here.
Okay.
I ordered a copy of it, actually. I finally found a copy with Baladev Vidyabhushana's commentary, and it took a few weeks for it to arrive, and it arrived at 9 o'clock on the morning I came here. So I'll have to tell you when I get back. Anirudha Prabhu?
Ordinarily, if Krishna couldn't go, then Balaram wouldn't go either.
Would it be Uddhava?
Sorry?
If Krishna couldn't go, then Balaram couldn't go or wouldn't go? Wouldn't go.
No, couldn't go.
He wouldn't go because Krishna couldn't go? He would...
It's mentioned, I can't remember where I read it. Was it in a Krishna book or was it in a commentary of Krishna Chakravarti book? Because Krishna wasn't going, then there was a high probability that Balaram also wouldn't go because Krishna was staying in Dwarka. But because he was so enthusiastic to go, to see the residents of Vrindavan, this word Utkanta means enthusiasm. He was very enthusiastic. He forgot about the fact, because of his enthusiasm, he forgot about the fact that Krishna wasn't going.
Okay, so Lord Balaram wanted to go back himself.
Yes, he went.
Wanted to go on holiday.
Later on, Krishna Chakravartaka mentions that Balaram ordinarily wouldn't have gone because Krishna wasn't going. But because he was so enthusiastic to meet the residents of Vrindavan, he forgot about that detail and went anyway.
Interesting. So Lord Balaram, he's also captivated by the reciprocations of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. As Prabhu is pointing out, so much so that normally he is so attached to Krishna, he wouldn't go anywhere Krishna wouldn't go. But because it's so much he's pulled to go there, so he went. Yeah, I can relate to that. I can imagine that he's in New Dwarka and he's thinking, I could go on a holiday, you know, and hang out with the devotees. No, not New Dwarka. He lives in Dwarka. New Dwarka is in Los Angeles. Is there anything else? Prabhu?
We hear that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. And we don't actually perceive it. So, what to this gap of our perception, like we read it, but we don't actually 100% believe.
Yeah. This is the difference between simply thinking about something intellectually and experiencing it factually. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Raja Vidya Raja Guyam Pavitram Idam Uttamam. Is that right? Yeah. Pratyaksha Vagamam Dharmyam Susukam Kartam Abhyayam. He says that this is the Raja Vidya, the king of all knowledge, Raja Guyam, the king of all confidential secrets. And he says, Pratyaksha Vagamam Dharmyam, it's the perfection of religion because it gives pratyaksha, direct perception of the self through realization. So by practicing the instructions that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, by applying them in our lives, we will get practical, direct perception and experience of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like when we are eating, we get the experience of being full, isn't it? After you eat a lot of prasadam, you feel full. You don't have to think about, do I believe that I feel full or not? It's not a matter of belief. You can feel it. So in the same way, by practicing what Krishna has said in Bhagavad Gita and Prabhupada has then explained, and then the other devotees, the senior devotees, the spiritual masters are explaining to us, by following that, we'll also get the same experience, the direct experience of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And you will know it, asamshayaha, without a doubt. There is no question of any doubt in your mind. Just like Srila Prabhupada once, a reporter said to him, what would you do if you found out that Krishna wasn't the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And then Srila Prabhupada just gave a big smile and he said, I'd do the same thing, because I'm happy. You can't deprogram a person like that. So we also can get that direct experience to such an extent that at the end we won't even care. Hey, Krishna can be the Supreme Personality of Godhead or not, I don't really care. I'm not going anywhere. So just keep on keeping on and it'll happen. Yeah. Just chant attentively and try to avoid offences. Be very submissive to devotees and try to serve them. And then in this way, all the things that trouble you will eventually be mitigated and eventually vanish. They'll be gone. Anything else? Prabhu?
Prabhu, if you don't mind, just tell us a very basic thing which always strikes me. By chanting, how it cleanses the heart? What is the mechanism?
What is the mechanism of the cleansing of the heart?
The heart by chanting. But Mahaprabhu says that it cleanses the heart. Cheto dharpana marjan.
Yes.
But in the first word, it starts to come. So how it cleanses it?
The power of the holy name to purify all sinful reactions. Yeah. The one analogy that is given is that the holy name is like the sun, and just as the sun purifies everything by its contact, and it never becomes contaminated itself, in the same way the contact with the holy name purifies everything in the heart. The holy name is the Supreme Lord himself, that the two are non-different. Aveda. They're one and the same. There's some code. Nam Nami.
Nam Nami.
They're one and the same. Nam Nami. Yeah. The name and the object, or the thing, the person that the name refers to, are non-different. Aveda. And so therefore, when we come into contact with the name ourselves, then that name purifies us. Just like the sun will purify any unclean place. Perhaps someone else has some more.
Well, just the extension of that in Harinam Chintamani, Haridas Thakur explains how ignorance are like mists and fog and cloud that cover the sun. And cover the soul, also cover the living entity. And with, as you say, with the appearance of the sun, then the mists and fog of ignorance is cleared away. It's dissipated. It's evaporated.
Dissipated.
So just as the sun's rays dissipate the mists and darkness from the mind, so similarly also the sun of Krishna's name dissipates the darkness of ignorance and enables us to see things clearly. Another example is, you know, at night you hear a noise and you're scared of it because you don't know what it is. When the sun has arisen, the same noise, you don't even notice it because you can see what's going on around you. The rising of the sun, the light dissipates the ignorance of the night. So similar with the rising of the holy name in the heart, then it gets rid of the. How does it do it? Well, it's Krishna's very powerful potency. How does he do it?
I have one realization about chanting, and that is that I can't chant Shuddhanam. All the things that are described about the holy name, you know, when the holy name is chanted, great ecstasy is felt and all these different symptoms are given. What does it say? What is that steel-framed heart that is not transformed or melted upon contact with the holy name? So my realization is that for me personally, the major benefit in the chanting that I'm getting at the moment is that I'm simply fulfilling the instruction of my spiritual master to try to chant with attention. Because my own chanting is so imperfect and so far away from Shuddhanam, the pure holy name, that there's probably really little benefit there. You know, just like sometimes there's a seminar where it talks about trying to cook on smoke. If there's smoke rather than fire, your water will not boil. So maybe my attempt to pronounce the name is a bit like that. But because my spiritual master told me to do it, and I try to do it as attentively as I can, I think I get some benefit from that. That maybe Krishna will see, oh, he's pretty out of it, but he's trying. So maybe he'll reach down and pull me up. Prabhu?
In the Shikshastika, Mahaprabhu mentions that the chanting of Hare Krishna is like the cleansing of the mirror, of the mind. And so, this, my understanding is that when you're chanting Hare Krishna over a period of time, then the dust that's accumulated on the mirror of the mind gets cleansed off. And then you're actually able to see the reflection of the self in the purified mind. So the heart is actually being purified by the chanting Hare Krishna to the point where your consciousness, your consciousness of yourself is realizable. It's actually like you're saying, Pratyaksha Sarvamandanya. It's the perfection of religion because it gives direct perception of the self. You know, how do you know that you are you? Well, how do you know that you are you? Because sometimes people, how do you know that what they're doing is real? How do you know that Krishna consciousness is working?
You
know it's working because, you directly perceive yourself clearly, or more clearly. Gradually it becomes more clear as to who you are. And also, along with that, what you're not, the things that you're not, or certainly the things that you don't want to be, that you may have associated with, and are causing all sorts of problems. So when the holy name is present, and we are, as you say, by Krishna's mercy, by the mercy of the spiritual master, we are more cognizant of ourselves, and the things that we have accumulated over many, many lifetimes that we don't want or we shouldn't have. These things become clearer and clearer as the mirror of the heart gets cleansed of the dust. Right? This is my understanding of chanting Hare Krishna. So in one sense, it's like the mirror of the heart, chaito dakana marjanam. It's the cleansing of the heart. Much like you get a cloth and you wipe it. And gradually you get rid of all the dust, and then you can see the reflection of yourself clearly.
Triyuga wanted to.
Also, Rupa Goswami says that he does that. So, Acharya, all Acharya is pointing there, Prabhupada is pointing. It has to be true, what Prabhu said, that we can realize in our own heart. I also heard that holy name dissolves the subtle body. So, would you like to give some enlightenment? How? Because you are very deep, you are going very deep into the subject, so I thought I'll ask you. Therefore, sorry if I'm...
Okay. I have read, I think it was Baladev Vidyabhushana, he has explained, that when the Lord kills the demons with his Sudarshan chakra, what happens is that the chakra kills not only the gross material body, but also the subtle material body. And it is the subtle material body that is transmigrating between different gross material bodies, carrying with it conceptions of life, just as the air carries aromas. And in that way it carries the seeds, the bija, the karma, for the next life. Just like if we suck all the air out of the room and make it into a vacuum, there will be no odors left. Similarly, once the subtle body is killed, there's no karma left. So therefore the demons, when they're killed by the Sudarshan chakra, their original spiritual form, which is free from envy of Krishna, because he explained the envy of Krishna is actually encoded into the subtle body. So when the demon is killed and his subtle body is killed, his envy of Krishna is gone, and then his original swarupa as Nitya Krishna Das becomes manifest, and then he achieves liberation to the spiritual world. So in the same way as Prabhu, you explained, the subtle body becomes dissolved and all the karmas are then gone. Only ones that are remaining, as if I understand correctly, our acharyas, are the prarabdha karmas, which are already manifested in this life. So this life plays out, and then when this one is finished, then everything is finished in the material world.
Also, the holy name potency is so much that even one Hare Krishna name, you cannot do more sins than what it can dissolve. So the potency of holy name is so great that nothing is left except the pure spiritual soul. Thank you.
Triyuga, you had your point?
I was just going to expand on the example of the sun. The sun can even purify stool in the urine by evaporating all the water out of it, and then nothing can live anymore. No bacteria can live in the stool in the urine after there's been contacted with the sun for some period of time.
Mm.
So all the nourishment for the filthiness is gone.
Can you summarize?
Yes, he's saying that just as the sun has an antiseptic effect, the chanting of the holy name also has antiseptic effect. And it removes the kind of preconditions for disease. Just like if a place is dirty, then very easily disease will come in that place. But when we keep it very clean and antiseptic, disinfected, then disease will not be able to take root. So in the same way, the holy name disinfects the heart.
And Bhagavatam says that Lord Krishna comes and sits in your heart. When the heart is clean, Lord will sit, and you can see him.
He's already there.
That's right, but we can't see. Yeah, that's right. He's always there. In every atom, he's there. We cannot perceive because of the contamination covering him.
In the third canon of Bhagavatam says that the process of devotional service is so potent that it automatically dissolves the false conception.
Just as
you know, a person who eats breakfast, goes about his daily work and digests his breakfast. So similarly also the process of devotional service dissolves the false conception of self.
Mm.
Automatically. Don't have to do anything else. We actually don't have to separately endeavor for anything other than just
educational
service, and gradually our false conceptions will be dissolved.
Mm.
We have to follow the process.
Mm.
Anything from the ladies? Contribution? No? Okay. Thank you all very much for coming today or for tuning in via the internet. And remember, if you've got any questions about today's class, you can leave a comment in the comment section. I'll be checking for the next 2 weeks and I will get back to you. Thank you very much. Grantarashrimad Bhagavatam Ki.